Hi, my name is Evan and I use he, him pronouns.
And my name is Sasha and I use they, them pronouns.
And we are
the Baker Street Regulars, a podcast where we are taking a queer magnifying glass to the Sherlock Holmes canon and its many adaptations.
Na 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 podcast. Bow. Thwack. Rack. Ecky, ecky, ding.
It just turns into the Knights Who Say Nay.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Baker Street Regulars. Batman edition.
Man-Bat edition.
Why Man-Bat?
Because he's half man, half bat. These are the jokes.
So this week we're talking about Batman.
Yes.
DC styles Batman as the world's greatest detective.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where have we heard that moniker before?
You know, so many places.
Right. I think Adrian Monk is the world's greatest detective.
Mm-hmm. The Fruit Loops toucan just follow my nose.
That's two detectives.
Well, okay. Here, to start off, how familiar are you with the Batman?
The Batman, the man, bat, the legend. I have a cultural osmosis Jones about Batman.
Osmosis Jones could also be a Sherlock. We don't have to deal with this now. We'll deal with it later.
Before this, I'd only ever seen one Batman movie, and it was Lego Batman.
Mm.
So, like, but I know the thing, right? He went to the movies as a kid with his parents, and then
nope.
They got moited in Crime
you're
Alley.
You're already wrong.
It was a movie.
No, it was the opera.
No. Christopher Nolan changed it to be the opera
In
his movie,
well.
Batman Begins. See, I'm like a real Batman fan. I just haven't seen any of them. Because Christopher Nolan is like, it's meaningful for a character in a movie to go to a movie, so he changed it to be an opera production of Don Giovanni. But it is a movie in the original. In the original comics, it's a movie. His parents get moited in Crime Alley, and then he becomes a vigilante who's dressed as a bat for some reason. I think he has some sort of childhood trauma related to bats. So I know that, and then he goes on to have a sidekick named Robin,
mm-hmm.
who is an acrobat turned crime-fighting vigilante sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
He has a butler named Alfred.
Yeah.
And he has a colorful cast of villains that he locks up in an asylum whenever they get loose, including the Joker, the Riddler, the Penguin, the Catwoman, and a bunch of other, like punny oddballs.
The Scarecrow.
Oh, Scarecrow. Yeah, of course, Scarecrow. Yeah.
Bane. Mr. Freeze.
Okay.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And it was a comic book originally, and then it's been adapted a lot of times since then.
Yes.
Most prominently in the hit film Batman v Superman.
That's your most prominently?
I'm joking.
So, I have seen... What have I seen? I've seen Batman and Robin, the George Clooney movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze, with the hard bat nipples and a bat credit card.
Thomas Schumacher made that.
Yes.
And then he made The Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah. I've seen Batman Begins and parts of The Dark Knight. I, of course, have seen The Justice League, which features Batman. I've seen clips of the Batman animated series from the 90s. And back in 2019, before the pandemic Lovato, I saw Joker in theaters.
Ah.
But no, that's my familiarity with Batman. And today we kind of popped a Batman cherry for me because...
Oh my God, say that a different way, please.
Nope.
That's how... Really?
And today we crossed off a couple new Batman series for me. Because today we're going to talk about the original Adam West Batman from the 60s. And then we watched an episode of the 2000s series Batman, the Brave and the Bold.
What's interesting is that these two TV versions of Batman sit on different parts of a spectrum of, like, who Batman is and what the tone of the show is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, both of these are produced for kids, predominantly, but the tone is very different. And I guess the, like, logical endpoint of the, like, hard, gritty realism thing that Christopher Nolan kicked off with his Batman trilogy is the most recent Batman film, The Batman, where Robert Pattinson plays...
The Batman.
And we considered watching The Batman.
Because out of the recent Batman movies, it's the most detective-like.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
But it seems like too much. It seems a little intense. And it didn't seem like the right amount of commitment or energy for a casebook.
Yeah.
For us. This was the right itch scratch.
Yeah. Mostly.
Mostly.
At least for me.
So let me do a little fast facts on us here. So Batman is a TV show that was being released between 1966 and 1968 on television. They made 3 seasons in that time and 120 episodes, which is a lot.
Not bad. Not bad for a series. Most series today don't even get that many.
No, because there's like labor laws.
Is that why?
That's part of why, yeah. I mean, you can't make this much of this cheaply anymore.
That's true.
I think that's a big part of it. It's based on the DC Comics character, of course, but reimagined as a, like, 60s sitcom without a laugh track, according to the producer, and featuring PSAs about things like eating your vegetables and drinking milk.
We somehow did not have that in the episode.
We did have a PSA.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, we did. We'll get to it in the episode.
Okay. I forget.
But there definitely was a PSA where they just, like, unsubtly snuck in.
The seatbelt.
Yeah. They were like, we're going to stop this mission dead cold to talk about the importance of wearing seatbelts. Incredible stuff. It's kind of famous for how campy it is, for the bright colors. And there's a lot of, like, conventions that got introduced that people still parodize.
It's very 60s.
It's very 60s.
It's very, like, H.R. Puffin stuff, 60s, like...
Yeah.
Groovy, flashy.
It's famous for doing these fight sequences where people are fighting and big words appear on the screen that say things like biff and pow. And then you like just cut to somebody reacting to the fight so you don't actually see all that much violence. Mm-hmm. Very good. It also does a really terrific... most of the episodes were two-parters, with some being three-parters or standalones. So they did this very terrific, like... What will happen next? Will Batman save the day? Like, all that kind of stuff happens with a big cheesy announcer. It's terrific. It's so...
Tune in next time for Batman.
It's really good.
It kind of harkens back to a previous episode where we talked about the radio show of Sherlock.
Yes.
It was a very radio show of them to be like, what will happen next? Tune in next week on Batman.
Yeah. So let's start talking about the two-parter we watched, and then I guess the question is this also, in some sense, a Sherlock? Because he's the world's greatest detective, quote-unquote, and he has a Watson in Robin, of course.
Right.
And especially in the 60s one, he also has, like, a housekeeper.
Yeah, well, he has Alfred.
He has Alfred and...
A maid.
Oh, and I meant the maid as the housekeeper.
Oh.
And he has this, like, relationship with the police where he doesn't work for them, but he works with them. And, you know, there's some things that fit there.
Yeah.
But let's get into the actual plot. The episodes we picked for the two-parter is The Perfect Crime, P-U-R-R-F-E-C-T.
And there's a reason.
Yes, and the second part is called Better Luck Next Time. And the villainess of these episodes is Catwoman.
Starring Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Right.
And also, I think Catwoman is like, everybody's like, the Joker. But I'm always like, Catwoman. She's so fun.
Now, I haven't seen a lot of Batman media, but I feel like she shows up a lot.
She does.
I feel like she's one of the characters that gets played with a lot. And I think one of the reasons is that she often has like... some sort of sexual tension with Batman.
Yeah, there's kind of always been this back and forth between each iteration, whether she's, like, villain or, like, anti-hero kind of love interest to Batman.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and the 60s show is also interesting because supposedly, although I didn't get it much in this episode, supposedly there is some romantic tension, at least, between Batman and Catwoman in the first season, when it's Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Mm-hmm.
But in the second season, when Catwoman is played by The Emperor's New Groove, Eartha Kitt, because it was the 60s, they couldn't depict a mixed-race relationship, and they just dropped the romance subplot. Which is a shame.
That is a shame.
Also, I love Eartha Kitt.
Oh, Eartha Kitt.
We wanted to watch an Eartha Kitt episode, but this one had really good reviews.
Yeah.
So we ended up with watching this one. And I have no regrets. I liked these episodes a lot. I had a lot of fun.
Honestly, they're both great as Catwoman.
I'm sure. Yeah.
10 out of 10.
Yeah. The episode begins with Catwoman, a gold statue of a cat from a art museum.
Mm-hmm. Already starting off on a great note because she has a hammer. And she taps the top of the glass case, and then she cuts a hole with her fingernail,
and then hits it again, and then it falls through. And it's like, why did you? Were you hoping it would just break, or were you just checking that it was glass? I'm not sure. It was very goofy. We cut to the next day, and Commissioner Gordon is in his office,
mm-hmm.
and he receives a box which has a kitten in it.
Yeah.
From Catwoman, I think we assume.
Right. Catwoman just loves to give cats away.
Yeah.
Finding good homes.
Yeah. I don't know why she does this. It doesn't really come up again.
No.
Ever. It's not like later she uses a cat as a weapon, which is also very funny. But this is just like her being like, Commissioner Gordon, it's me. Like,
Have a cat. I love how it's Julie Newmar, but we're still doing an Eartha Kitt voice.
I love Eartha Kitt. So Commissioner Gordon is like, well, this must be the work of Catwoman because this is the cat.
And stole a cat statue, so...
So it must be Catwoman. So
two cats make a right.
So they call in Batman. They have the big red phone, and it rings in...
Very Powerpuff Girls.
Well, I'm sure Powerpuff Girls got it from them.
What?
And it rings in Bruce Wayne's mansion, where him and... Dick Grayson, which is Robin,
mm-hmm.
are literally playing 3D chess.
Literally, yeah.
Yeah. They have a chess set that has multiple levels.
Mm-hmm. It's like four boards stacked on top of each other.
Right. That they're somehow playing.
How would you concentrate on that? I wouldn't.
I think that's the point. I think the story is like, they're so smart that they can play literal 3D chess.
Because
he's the world's greatest detective.
Yeah, but it's also Adam West. I think my feelings on Adam West are very, like, tainted in a way because of his appearances on Fairly Odd Parents and on Family Guy.
Who was he on Fairly Odd Parents?
So in Fairly Odd Parents, he played another superhero, Catman.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And then on Family Guy, he's just the mayor of Quahog, Mayor Adam West. And in both shows, he's an idiot. So I'm kind of, like, unfortunately painted that, like, if I hear Adam West's voice, I'm like, well, that's an idiot right there.
He does have this very, like, old school, like, American masculine delivery. He sounds like Kronk, actually. I kept expecting, like, Patrick Warburton could play Adam West's Batman in a movie, you know?
It's so funny because Patrick Warburton's also in Family Guy.
Oh, incredible.
But, you know, they get the call from Commissioner Gordon, and then they... slide down the poles to the Batcave.
Oh, yes. Okay, so we have to talk about my favorite production detail from the show.
That everything has, like...
Everything is labeled.
Everything's labeled?
Everything is labeled.
The label maker was really popping off.
But it's the 60s, so it's all hand-painted signs. And they have two poles, and one of them is thicker and one of them is thinner. And the thicker one is labeled Batman, and the thinner one is labeled Robin.
The joke writes itself.
Yeah, I'm not gonna... Right. We're above it. We're above that, really.
No, we're not.
So they go down into the Batcave and then rush off to meet with Commissioner Gordon in the Bat costume.
And they just park their car in front of City Hall.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's no, like, secret hidden places or, like, an alleyway where they park. They're just like, we're doing our crime solving out in the open.
Also, this meeting could have been a phone call.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they had to put on outfits to go talk to Commissioner Gordon is very funny to me. But they're, like, on the case, so to speak. So he, you know, this is the client, right?
This is where Powerpuff Girls is better, because the mayor is able to get everything across to the girls on the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, Commissioner Gordon, you can get better. Do better.
Oh, I thought you were going to be like, the Powerpuff Girls are all Sherlock Holmes.
Well, now that you say it.
I think maybe the Powerpuff Girls might be Batman.
Batman is Sherlock Holmes, so therefore...
Yeah. So their brilliant strategy, because there's two of these cat statues, their brilliant strategy is to go stake out the location of the other cat statue. They're both those place separate places. And they also meet the man who owns the two cat statues, who has a larger collection of art. And they go, that must be the target. He's going to lead up to stealing all of the art,
right,
the valuables from this one guy. So they go to where the other cat statue is on display, which is a different art gallery.
Yeah.
And they coat it in a radioactive mist.
Yeah.
Which, because the idea is that they're going to try to stop Catwoman, but if she should get away, they want to have some way of tracking the statue.
Right.
It's just a backup plan.
It's the 60s. Radiation is the new frontier.
I guess it is. Because they're not wearing any protective equipment.
No.
They're just standing right next to it and coating it in radioactive mist. And then Batman's like, all right, we're going to split up. I'm going to go check the perimeter or whatever. And Robin's like, okay. And then he just starts spraying with the mist again. Like,
and then he gets attacked by the cat.
He gets attacked by the cat.
And passes out?
Yes. The cat drugs him somehow. Okay. Basically, once again, Catwoman shows up. She throws a kitten at Robin.
Yeah.
Which knocks him unconscious.
It's not explained.
I think it's explained later. I think it's drugged somehow. Like some of the drugs, like in the talons, maybe, that put him out. I don't know.
Yeah. And then Catwoman steals the other cat statue.
Yes. Batman is worried about Robin, but he gets involved in a fight first.
Mm-hmm.
And
we get our first thwack.
Right. Catwoman and the goons get away.
Pow.
Yes.
Splat.
We haven't talked about the goons yet, but they are middle-aged men dressed in leopard print.
Yeah.
With cat ear hats.
Yeah.
So just to... Also, I haven't looked the guy up, but one of them has equal star billing to Catwoman.
Mm.
So he must be a...
Famous actor?
Famous actor of the period.
Maybe.
Jock something.
But they're not Julie Newmar.
But they're not too Kung Fu thanks to everything Julie Newmar.
Right.
That's true. What do you think of Julie Newmar's performance as Catwoman?
I enjoy it.
She's a very laconic line delivery. everything is...
Yes, Batman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but...
I'm going to take a cat nap.
There's so many of those little bits of wordplay. But also, she delivers all of her lines with this, with no inflection. There's a lot of, see here, Batman. That's exactly the way it's going to be, or whatever. My favorite line she has in the entire thing is she goes, tisk, tisk, and yet another tisk, Batman.
It's so good.
It's so good.
She's kind of everything.
Also, everything in her lair, which is just a sort of up-decorated living room, is filmed...
Living room? That's she's in a warehouse, loft, apartment type thing.
I guess. It's a weird room, but it's everything... In the room is always filmed at a Dutch angle.
Yes.
And her entire lair is not always filmed at a Dutch angle, but this one room that is her main lair room is always filmed at a Dutch angle.
Hmm.
For some reason. Because she's evil, I guess.
And evil means Dutch angles. I can be your Dutch angle or your Dutch devil.
Nice.
Thank you.
So Batman and Robin get in the Batmobile and track the radioactive mist.
Well, first we learn to buckle up.
Oh, right. Oh, I think that's earlier. I think it's when they leave City Hall is when they do this.
Probably. But this is now the best part to mention the PSA.
Right. Batman's aren't you going to put on your... I think there's some fancier term, but it's a bat seatbelt, effectively. And Robin says, but we're only going a couple blocks. And Batman's but Robin, remember, motorist safety. And he's well, when you put it that way...
So good.
It's really good.
It's so good. But they follow the radiation tracking.
Mm-hmm. Catwoman's lair. She's expecting them.
Right.
Because she realizes that... I forget how she realizes that they're on her trail. Because she doesn't realize about the radiation stuff.
I think she knows everything. I think she's
I think she doesn't know about the radioactive mist because it comes in later as well.
Mm.
But
she knows they're going to find her soon enough. And
yes. So they track the radioactive mist to the warehouse where... She does her nefarious deeds in plotting, which is the Gato and Shot Fur Company, which is the...
Gato means cat in Spanish, and Shot means cat in French. Very good, Robin.
Right. So they break in, and this is just like cat and mouse games.
Ha ha.
Ha ha.
Yeah, immediately they go down a trapdoor, and there's a wall with spikes.
There's two Alton Spikes encroaching in from both sides, and Batman tries to hold them apart before he realizes that they're made of foam.
And Catwoman's like, ha ha, dummy, I got you.
And then one of her goons, like, opens a little hatch and throws a bomb into the room, which, like, explodes just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, it's just like a flash bomb, and then Batman picks it up, and a little flag pops out of it that says...
Pow.
Pow.
Also, Catwoman's watching all this on... a TV screen of some sorts. We don't know where the camera is.
Right. And then a tube descends from the ceiling.
And sucks up Robin.
And yeah, and sucks Robin off to another room.
That is what happens, yes. And so Batman's all alone.
Right.
And Catwoman is like, here's the real test.
There's two doors. But first the two walls of spikes roll out of the way, which suggests there's more room somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, why didn't you just go there when the spikes were closing? just go closer to the camera, I guess, no, where the spikes went off to.
That's off stage. We can't go off stage.
They really are plays, I think.
They really are plays.
So it's just like, in front of you, Batman, there are two doors.
One door leads to me, the other there's a tiger.
It's the lady or the tiger. And Batman opens the door, and it's the wrong door. There's a tiger,
mm-hmm.
which leaps at the camera, and there's a blackout.
Yeah,
end of the first episode.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about, I'm on the Batman wiki, and for each first episode, it lists the cliffhanger text. And the cliffhanger text for this episode is, will Batman ever see Robin alive again? Will Robin ever see Batman alive again? Will our daring duo escape the claws of the wily Catwoman? The answer to these and many other terrifying questions tomorrow night. Same cat time, same cat channel. Which is very good. Which is a play on same bat time, bat channel, which I guess they would usually do as a sign off.
Right.
Also, I didn't realize it was on successive nights.
Yes.
It wasn't like every week. It was multiple times a week.
The first two seasons, each episode would air, like the two-parters would air one night and then the next night. And then in season three, it would just be once a week.
Oh, interesting.
Would be the episodes. Because I think they only did like one-parter episodes by season three.
Hmm.
And then it leads into the next episode, Better Luck Next Time.
Yes.
Which is not a cat pun.
No. I don't know if there's supposed to be some deeper meaning there.
I think they just gave up.
Right. They came up with so many cat puns. Mm-hmm. I mean, truly, so much of the first episode is Catwoman being like, bring around the car and park it catty corner. You know, like,
don't forget to water the pussy willows.
Oh, right. She has pussy willow plants
mm-hmm.
in her lair, which she references multiple times because of the play on words, I guess.
Yeah, that's one way to get past the censors.
So true, bestie. So the first thing they have to resolve at the beginning of the second episode is that Batman is supposed to fight a tiger.
Now, obviously, the person in the Batman suit is not Batman fighting this tiger.
I want to point out they do have a real tiger here.
They do have a real tiger.
They may not have much in terms of sets, but they paid for a tiger and a tiger trainer, presumably.
Yeah.
So,
and the tiger trainer is probably in the Batman costume.
Yes, there definitely is a man in the Batman costume who is more or less Batman-shaped.
Now, I found out a fun fact about this.
Mm-hmm.
So Batman and Robin, of the two, Batman is the only one who has a stunt double. Robin could not have a stunt double. Burt Ward could not have one because his costume was too revealing and showed too much of his face.
Interesting.
So it would have been too obvious that it wasn't him. So he had to do all of his own stunts.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Yeah. That's Meanwhile, crazy. Adam West is like in the corner in his like actor chair smoking like, you got this.
That's funny. Because definitely this is not Adam West. Right? Yeah. They do this thing where there's, like, a Batman who's kind of in shadow, who's just, like pawing.
Swatting
like,
at it.
Just playing with the tiger, really.
Yeah.
And then they'll cut to, like, a close-up of Adam West going, oh no, whatever, you know. And eventually Adam West's Batman climbs the wall,
mm-hmm.
which again raises questions about the size and dimensions of the room, and then puts on bat earplugs and activates his communicator in reverse so that it plays a loud sound, loud enough to, as the announcer describes, explode the tiger's skull.
Now, it does not. It just subdues the tiger.
Yes. It subdues the tiger so that he can get past it to the other door.
Yeah.
Which does not have another tiger behind it. Because I think that if I were Julie Newmar Catwoman, I would photograph behind both doors.
That'd be so camp. Neumeier, if you're listening.
But she does have more tigers. So he ends up in this, like, maze of hallways.
Mm-hmm.
And he from his utility belt, gets a, like, bat decal, which is, like, glittery
construction paper.
Yeah, that symbol, and sticks it to the wall. And I was like, maybe that's, like, some gadget or something. And it's not. It's just, it's a sticker is what it is. Because he's trying to, like, find his way around, and he wants to, like, notice if he passes the same wall twice.
Yeah.
Basically.
And he does. Meanwhile, Robin is put into this very convoluted trap.
Not even a trap, it's just a way to kill him. But very complicated. So the idea is that there's a pit of tigers below,
mm-hmm.
and they have to be fed at a specific time. So they've loaded Robin. They haven't restrained him. They just put him on a plank, like he was walking the plank, but instead he's lying on the plank, which is counterweighted to a, like, giant test tube of sand.
That is his weight?
That is exactly his weight, and it is supposed to run out over the course of, it seems like, just several minutes, after which time he'll fall into the pit and be consumed by the tigers.
But also, like, immediately, if he were heavier, he'd just fall in.
Because the thing starts to tilt. It seems like they could have saved the trouble and buying all that sand.
And just throw him in.
And just wait till the right time when it was the tiger's mealtime, and throw him in.
Yeah.
I don't know why they had to wait 5 minutes and build this thing.
Well, because we have to get Batman to show up.
Right. It's a delaying tactic. In the narrative, Robin is the damsel.
Mm-hmm. And then Catwoman's like, okay, I'm going to go do my thing now. Y'all handle this.
Right. She gets away while Batman is fighting the henchmen.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the henchmen also gets away.
Right. But the two other henchmen do not.
And they die?
No, they're just put in jail.
Off screen.
Yeah.
We don't see it.
No, we don't see it. But yeah. They're assumingly put in jail. And also Batman and Robin get the cat statues back.
At this point in the narrative, they realize what's actually going on. It takes them a minute.
This is my favorite part. Everybody in Gotham has the complete 5-volume set of the complete history of Gotham City.
Yes. Or at least Catwoman and Batman both do.
I'm assuming everybody at this point.
Everybody has it. And there's this pirate who died and left all of his doubloons to the children of Gotham,
mm-hmm.
except for a treasure chest of his that was never found.
Yes.
And when you put the cats together,
they create a map
that shows you where that treasure chest is.
Mm-hmm. I guess Catwoman has it memorized.
She's already on the way there, and they, even though they have the map in front of them, they don't just use that to tell them where to go. They realize that the radioactive mist probably rubbed off on Catwoman, which is going to cause some problems later in her life, I suppose, or could, and track her with that. This is when she puts mines in the road.
Yes.
Because one of the henchmen gets away and is like, Batman is probably on his way. So they mine the road, and then Batman
with
has...
Alternative plan B, right?
And Batman has activated the Batmobile armor as a precaution, I suppose. So the car is fine. He drives over all these explosives. The car is basically fine, but the tires are deflated.
But have no fear, because he has a tire inflator, a tire fixer button,
yeah,
in the Batmobile.
Right.
So it was pointless to even point out that the tires are flat.
Yeah.
Here's what I love about this show. They will point out the stupidest things.
Right. And they'll be like, I bet you were wondering about the tires. Well, we'll solve that.
I love it. It's those little nitpicky details that make me go, this is fun.
We also haven't talked about the fact that the pirate captain whose treasure they're searching for is called Captain Manx, which is also a cat thing.
Yeah. Everything is cat-themed. We're actually turning into a cats podcast. We're going to talk about Cats the Musical every single day.
You wish.
I do. Cats is a Sherlock because Mr. Mistopheles finds old Deuteronomy, or magics old Deuteronomy back. Boom. I did it.
Boom, indeed.
And Rum-Tum Tugger is Watson. Because they're in love.
So they arrive at this cave.
Catwoman and the henchman are already in there collecting the treasure.
Right.
The henchman is like, great, now that there's only two of us, we'll split all of this, and it's going to be great, and we're going to be fine. And then Catwoman sprays him in the face with, like, some, like, sleeping thing and goes, I don't share.
Right. Which, you know.
That's stupid on a henchman's part.
Yeah. Here I was thinking the Catwoman was a good lady, and I guess not.
Because Catwoman, as soon as he says that, she goes, huh. Right. She has like a look on her face like, no, you thought. But Batman and Robin show up, Catwoman has all the treasure, and we get like this little chase through the caves.
Yeah, it's very briefly Scooby-Doo. There's a lot of like running around going on. And then this ends when she gets to one end of the cave where there's a jump across a what is described as a bottomless pit, which is not a real thing.
No.
I don't know why this is where I draw the line, but they're like, you'll never make it. And she's like, watch me. And she jumps, and then she like doesn't quite make it. So she's like clinging to the side of this cliff.
And Batman's
with
like,
the treasure.
Yeah. And Batman's like, let go of the treasure. It'll save your life. We can help you. And she's like, never. I can't let go of the treasure. And then she falls.
She falls into the pit with the
treasure.
With the treasure.
And Robin's like, hey, are you okay? Catwoman, can you hear me? Are you okay? And we don't hear a thud or any answer. No. So it might be bottomless.
It might be bottomless.
But luckily, there's a cat there for, you know, Robin and Batman to take and adopt. And
which they do. They move. They go back home with the cat.
Mm-hmm.
They declare the day saved. I don't know what happens to the coins.
Oh, nothing happens to the coins.
Oh, right, because they're in the pit.
Yeah. But
and they, yeah, then they...
They're trying to retrain the cat to be good.
Yeah, because he, like, steals the lobster for dinner. They're like, he comes from a broken home. That's the end of the episode.
That's the end of the episode. And it's so much fun.
It's so much fun. But the question is it Sherlocky?
Yeah, I think it is. Because there's definitely, like, deductions made. And, like, there's clues that they need to figure out. And that, like, Batman is able to solve. And actually, Robin solves a lot of it, too. So they're kind of, like, a true team. Where it's not just, like, Watson being like, my Jove, how did you figure this out? It's like them kind of working together as a cohesive team.
Yes. But I will say that, like, Sherlock makes these brilliant deductions where you're like, I couldn't have pieced that together. And then he explains how. And you're like, wow, the pieces are all in front of me. This isn't that. This is like, I've been screaming at my TV for the last 10 minutes waiting for them to notice this one thing. And Batman is like, hold on a minute. What if you put the statues together? You know?
That's fair. But I would also say, that's pretty, with the exception of, like, Granada and, like, certain Granada-esque Holmes adaptations, I would say that's pretty on par with what we have seen so far, where we're kind of sometimes screaming at the TV or screaming at Holmes going, it's right behind you. It's
oh, I don't think we've seen so many like that.
I think we've seen quite a few like that.
Like what?
Like Smarter Brother, Without a Clue, Murder by Decree.
Murder by Decree didn't make any sense. I wasn't expecting those twists and turns because they weren't logical. I think this is unusual in how, like, uncomplicated and how unsatisfying the solutions to the crimes are.
Oh, I didn't find it unsatisfying.
No, I found the episode fairly satisfying, but it wasn't about the mystery, of course. It's just, you know.
Yeah, but I guess because I knew going in it was Batman, I didn't expect it to be, like, mystery.
No, I mean, yeah, if we're evaluating this on the level of does it deliver a fun product based on Batman, I think of course it does. But this is a Sherlock podcast.
What?
So I don't know if it totally gets full marks from me as an adaptation of the Sherlock Holmes story. A lot of the crime solving came down to punching.
I think this is the version of Sherlock Holmes that actually kicks butt. If Sherlock Holmes was able to kick butt, he would be Batman.
Wait till you meet Robert Downey Jr.
He's Batman.
He's Victorian Batman.
He's Victorian Batman.
God, he might be. Well, we'll keep that in mind when we get there.
And Victorian Iron Man all in one.
Let's talk about the other episode real quick. I think we probably both have less to say about it. The episode is called Trials of the Demon.
This is from Batman, the Brave and the Bold.
This is on TV between 2008 and 2011.
I do remember this.
I don't think I ever saw it.
I never saw it because I was young and was not a big superhero fan growing up, but I definitely saw the commercials for it. I definitely like caught the ends or beginnings of episodes as like other shows that I'd rather watch were on.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely was watching cartoons in the era around, maybe a little earlier, but the era around this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this has, like, real Ben 10 vibes, which is a show that I did watch
mm-hmm.
around the same time. There's a certain, like, hollowness here. Like, it's competent, and there's a, like, paid-by-numbers sense of storytelling, but it doesn't feel like this is anybody's passion project. Is that fair?
Yeah.
There's no heart in it.
There's no heart. It's also way too short.
It's really short. And they also spend the first 5 minutes, I assume, of every episode doing a, like, short story.
Yeah.
So this episode, which is called Trials of the Demon, the first 5 minutes is this, like, very brief thing with Batman teaming up with the Flash to thwart the Scarecrow on Halloween.
Which has nothing to do.
Which has nothing to do with the rest of the story.
It was cool.
Yeah.
It was fun. And that was, like, possibly the part of the episode that I was like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah. And then we smash cut to Victorian England. Sherlock Holmes and John Watson
mm-hmm.
on a foggy Victorian street.
Yeah.
Discussing the latest in a series of murders. Oh, we also see one of the murders take place first.
Yes.
Murder by decree style. A woman is lured into a carriage and then...
Now, of course, this is a Cartoon Network show, so she can't be a prostitute.
Oh, and she also isn't dead.
No.
She's sort of like zombified but and alive.
She just don't got a soul.
And she makes a full recovery.
Yeah.
But we assume by the end of the episode. Assume. There is actually some like complicated interactions going on here. All of the Batman, the Brave, and the Bold episodes involve him teaming up with some other DC character, and this is no exception. Jason Blood, who's living in the Victorian era, I don't know these characters, makes a magic portal that Sherlock Holmes activates, which brings Batman into the period.
Yeah, because Jason Blood, because he's all witchy and stuff, is being accused of causing all these...
Moitas.
Not moitas, but moitas.
Right. But Sherlock Holmes immediately deduces that it can't possibly be Jason Blood because, you know, classic Sherlock Holmes kind of thing, because he writes with his left hand and the notes are written with the right, by a right-handed person. And, you know, he's doing the Sherlock Holmes thing. And what's interesting about this is that with 1960s Batman, we're saying, is this Batman Sherlock Holmes? And what this episode is saying is, like, there is a difference between these two characters.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting. So, like, Sherlock activates this portal, and Batman gets sucked out of his reality where he's actually dealing with an art heist,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of a funny relationship between the episodes we watched, and into Victorian era. Yeah. And Sherlock does, like, big Sherlock deductions where he's like, he wears a bat and there's, you know, childhood trauma that probably caused this, and his parents probably died, and he probably had this kind of upbringing, and he probably is a millionaire. Like picks up all these little details and things.
And then Batman, like an asshole, is like, well, you're Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
And Sherlock's like, how'd you deduce that? And Batman's like, the hat.
Right. Which is like, so like the joke of the scene is that like Sherlock Holmes is this like intellectual who has this like intellectual approach to things. And then Batman is just going to like, is smart, but blunt about it, I guess.
Yeah.
Street smart versus book smart, maybe? Except later it's...
But Bruce Wayne is rich.
Right. And, so like, and later it's also shown that Sherlock, like, has some combat abilities, too.
Yeah.
He's scrappy and he gets in fights.
Yeah. So basically, just to summarize the plot.
Yeah.
The villain is a guy named Jim Craddock, Gentleman Jim Craddock.
Who, this is the origin story for a DC villain.
Right? The Gentleman Ghost.
The Gentleman Ghost. This is how he becomes the Gentleman Ghost, and is also this is the first time he meets Batman. So Batman recognizes him immediately, and he's like, who are you? How do you know who I am? And then there's some, like, he's made this deal with this, with some devil thing who is playing him to get him to steal souls.
For immortality and also to escape from...
Right. So the deal he thinks he's making is to be immortal, but actually he's just, his soul is immortal, which is why he becomes a supervillain ghost that Batman has to fight for the rest of time.
Yeah. And it's just a bunch of fighting scenes. Sherlock fights Craddock at one point, but gets his soul taken out. And then the rest of the episode is Batman and Blood.
Right.
Fighting Craddock and the evil big demon guy.
Right, which is interesting because this show is about Batman teaming up with people. There is a Holmes-Watson dynamic going on here, but it's not Holmes and Watson.
Yeah.
Like, Watson might as well not be here for all he does in the story.
And Watson is not really there. Also in this one, he's not the Dr. Watson?
No, he works with the police much more directly. At one point, it says, they say, Watson, get your police force.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that's about.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. But Holmes kind of gets upright soul snatched and is kind of...
Well, out. Yeah. I mean, he gets one step ahead of Batman and figures out where the villain lair is and rushes off to deal with it on his own. And there's a sort of an element of like,
I must beat this Batman.
Right. I have to actually go do this and be the hero before he gets there. And he also like gets damseled. I mean, he's like holding his own in a fight for a little bit, but then he gets completely caught and his soul gets stolen. And then Batman has to like do the big finale.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. The show's called Batman. But, like...
But if you're going to have Sherlock Holmes in it...
Right.
Have Sherlock Holmes in it. Like, the Scooby-Doo episodes, and even Tom and Jerry meet Sherlock Holmes, has more Sherlock Holmes than this ever did.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, big fight. They, you know...
Iron defeats the big demon baddie.
Iron?
Yeah.
Oh, the metal iron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Gentleman Ghost becomes Gentleman Ghost. Batman gets transported back to his modern time.
Oh, well, before that, he gives all the souls back.
Yeah.
Before that, Sherlock is about to send him back using the portal again. And he's like, how did you really know that I was Sherlock Holmes? And he says, because you're the greatest detective.
You're the world's greatest detective.
Right. Which I think is, like, telling. Like, the framing we started this episode with is, like, DC used to say that in the comics, Batman was the world's greatest detective.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the 2010s, they're sort of like, he's not. You know? He's, like, he's a vigilante, he's a crime fighter, more than he's a detective.
Yeah.
It's a different perspective.
Yeah. And that's how that episode ends. So, okay. two things on my end.
Yeah.
One, the characterization of Sherlock in this is, without a doubt, the bitchiest and, like, most snarky. Like, all the negative traits of Sherlock that, like, I express that people know about him at the beginning of, like, this season. This is it. Like, this is the ultimate version of Sherlock that I think, unfortunately, people think of Sherlock as.
Yeah.
As this snarky bitch.
Right, he doesn't really play well with others.
Yeah.
He's like, wants to do his own thing, and then he just like...
wants to be better than everybody.
Right, but also isn't, you know?
Yeah.
Which we don't usually see with Sherlock Holmes. Often there's a sense of like, this guy has to be the coolest because he's my cool male hero that I'm writing about, you know?
Yeah.
This isn't really that. This is like, I mean, like the Scooby-Doo episodes, it's Victorian England as a setting, Sherlock Holmes as a genre, you know, almost... And then they're loosely doing this Jack the Ripper thing.
Yeah.
Also, but without calling them prostitutes and without killing them.
Right. And then my other thing, and like, this is not the fault of the series per se, or the fault of like the showrunners, but this is definitely a series of Batman that if you are unaware of everything DC, You cannot watch the series on its own.
No,
you
right.
You have to be so familiar with every collaboration, every other DC hero and villain. Like,
right. This episode expects you to know who Jason Blood is and who the Gentleman Ghost is and to be, like, satisfied by this origin story being that. You know, like, I think there's something smart about writing an origin story. You know, this episode's doing a lot of things in a fairly short time, like an origin story for the Gentleman Ghost, including the Sherlock Holmes milieu, a couple big fight sequences. We didn't even talk about the fact that there's a fight sequence in the middle for no reason.
With the giant snake.
With the giant snake and the, like, transforming Batman's cape to be, like, bat wings that drag him away. And, like, that's, you know, it's...
Yeah, it's clever.
Yeah. Is it clever? It's just a big snake.
It's just... There's not enough time for the story.
Yeah.
That I feel like...
Yeah, everybody ends up being really two-dimensional.
Yeah, it honestly made me wish that it was a two-parter like the original Batman series.
Yeah.
So that we can get more with the characters and more like, what are we trying to defeat? Who are you, Jason Blood? It'd be nice to know.
Yeah.
Like, this is... And I think it's why I kind of prefer the original series, you can just jump in blind. You don't have to know who Batman is.
Right.
You don't have to know any of the comic history or like anything at all. And you can jump in blind and have a great time watching the series as is.
Well, I think part of that is that the 1960s show is sort of like spiteful of what the comics are. Like, it's just like doing its own thing in a very unique way. Because the comics weren't that campy and weren't that zany. And the guy who made the 60s show was like, I'm just going to do Batman the way I want to do it. You know, I don't really want to make a comic book TV show.
That's fair. And I guess Batman the Brave and the Bold really wanted to stick to the true heart, the comics, and of the origins of the comics, which is great. Like, I love that for them. Mm-hmm. I love that. It's just one of those things where it's like, oh, I wish I had more of that context. I think because I didn't have the context, I couldn't enjoy it as much.
Yeah, I definitely had more fun watching the 1960s TV show because it was so goofy. I mean, it's also a lot of dead air. It's certainly the kind of TV show you wouldn't make today for a lot of reasons. But there were times that I was not super engaged. But, you know, overall, much more fun, I thought.
Yeah.
So the big question, is this a Sherlock Holmes in some way?
You know, I'm still going to say yes. I think it has all the elements. I think it's just if Sherlock Holmes actually fought people.
I'm going to say no, because I don't think that it has enough actual, I don't think either of them have enough actual, like, deduction of clues and crime solving going on. I think that both of them, even though the vibes are pretty different, I think both of them are mostly about getting us between combat sequences.
Mm.
And, you know, Sherlock doesn't really get involved in significant combat. And, you know, he's all about the deduction and the crime solving. So I think that's a point of distinction. I think since we disagree, though, I think we have to go plausible, but not busted. To keep using the Mythbusters framework we've been using.
Well, I'm also wondering if the Tim Burton movies, or if the Christopher Nolan movies, or even like the recent The Batman movie, if like those are more detective-y and Sherlock-y than the TV shows. Like, I'm wondering if we would get a little more out of those.
Mm.
Or if at least you would get a lot more out of those, because I still think no matter what, Batman is a Sherlock of some sort.
Mm. Well, next week we're getting back into things that are definitely Sherlock's when we look at two musical stage adaptations of the Sherlock Holmes stories.
Sherlock and Watson love duet. I need it. I'm hoping for it. I'm praying for it.
Actually, it seems possible. It seems possible that they would get a, like, we have a good relationship duet.
No, I want a love duet. I want them making out. I want, like, a Wicked As Long As You're Mine, but with Sherlock and Watson.
Well, let's manifest that.
And I want a big Moriarty villain song. A la Great Mouse Detective.
If you want to find out if we get any of those things, you can join us next week. We've been your Baker Street regulars.
And we'll see you next time. Bye.